on a blue background read distributed by Buena Vista. Blue italic letters read Walt Disney Productions presents. Blue italic letters have a ghoulish green glow around them reading Return from Witch Mountain. Behind the letters, dark silhouettes of pine trees emerge. Starring Bette Davis, Letha. Starring Christopher Lee, Victor. Co-starring Kim Richards, Tia. Ike Eisenman, Tony. Co-starring Jack Su, Mr. Yokomoto, Anthony James, Sickle, Dick Pakalian, Eddie, Ward Costello, Mr. Clearcoal. Co-starring Christian Jutner, Dazzler, Brad Savage, Muscles, Poindexter, Crusher, Jeffrey Jacket, Rocky. In the background, an ominous towering mountain reaches up to the night sky. Beyond it lies a dusky valley with pine trees in the foreground. A small white light shoots up from the valley, traveling towards the foreground. As it flashes by, it shows itself to be a flying saucer. In daylight, the saucer flies over hills, rotating at a great speed. It has a small white circular dome under its base. A valley filled with houses passes underneath its path. The saucer moves towards a large open-air arena in the distance. Blue italic letters read, Art Directors, John B. Mansbridge and Jack Center. Editor, Bob Bring. Music, Lalo Schifrin. Director of Photography, Frank Phillips. The saucer flies over the arena, which is a football stadium. It descends towards the center. Written by Malcolm Marmerstein, based on characters created by Alexander Key. Produced by Ron Miller and Jerome Cortland. Directed by John Huff. The saucer descends to the pitch, its body creating a shadow on the grass. Its undercarriage glows red, yellow, then white. Orange shafts of light beam down, and from within their glow, a bluer shaft transports Tia, Tony and Uncle Benet down onto the grass.
Nice landing, Uncle Benet. Right on the 50-yard line.
Yeah, you should have gone for a touchdown.
Next time, I'll put it right between the goalposts.
Tony wears stone-colored trousers, a roll-neck blue sweater, Tia a red culotte suit, and Uncle Benet has a full white beard.
Can't wait to see the museums and go to all the concerts.
That's why we arranged this little vacation. We've been so busy establishing our own community on Witch Mountain that you two haven't had an opportunity to see what life in the big city's all about.
Uncle Benet carries two suitcases.
I'd rather go down to the beach and learn how to surf.
There'll be another time for that. Just remember what I told you and have a lot of fun.
Walking out of the stadium, they come to a padlocked fence.
It's locked.
Tia?
Tia puts her hands to her head, but Tony rises up in the air.
Tony, come back here.
Reluctantly, Tony looks down at his uncle before floating back to the ground.
Now, never energize unless it's absolutely necessary. Tia?
Uncle Benet nods to the fence, and Tia closes her eyes and touches her head. The lock pops open and the gate swings open.
If Earth kids can live here without energizing, you can too.
Behind them, the gates close with the chain and lock reattaching themselves. Outside the Rose Bowl Stadium, a yellow taxi driver polishes his cab. He wears a flat cap and a silver racing suit. Spotting the three approaching, he jumps into his cab, reversing rapidly. Tony jumps out of the way as the cab draws level to them.
You at a party what I'm supposed to pick up?
That's right, just the children.
All right. Meet us running, hop in. I got it.
Uncle Benet hands over the suitcases.
I've been waiting here forever. You know, people are supposed to wait for taxis, not taxis wait for people.
We're exactly on time.
Yeah, well, kind of a strange time and place to be making a pickup. I mean, if you're here for the next game, it's in 3 months.
We have seats on the 50-yard line. Deliver the children to this address and you'll be paid after you arrive.
Hey, this is a big fare here. I mean, if these kids are going to pay me, I hope they know I get a big tip.
The driver reads the piece of paper given to him by Uncle Benet.
Now everything has been arranged. I'll see you Friday.
Okay, goodbye, Uncle Benet.
Goodbye.
Have fun, you two.
The taxi screeches backwards through the stadium gates and turns down an exit road, speeding across a concourse. Uncle Benet watches with a look of concern. The cab drives down a main road, tall buildings in the background. Tia and Tony look at the cityscape and smile at a statue of an elephant with its trunk raised. A van overtakes the cab.
Look at that dummy. Get off the road, you dummy!
Tia smiles in the back of the cab.
These civilians, they don't know how to drive. They gotta be kept off the streets. The streets belong to us professional drivers. Taxis, buses, trucks. That's all that should be allowed on the streets. See, I happen to know a great deal about driving. I have a perfect safety record. Come on, get out of the way, you bum!
A black sports car pulls into an alleyway. Its blacked-out windows are wound down, and two men and a woman peer out at a tall building opposite with the words Huss, Barrack & Co. on it. The driver is dressed in black and gets out of the car, soon followed by a man in a brown suit and hat with a red tie. The driver opens up the other passenger door and a blonde old woman gets out. She wears a hat with two long feathers protruding from it.
Thank you. Thank you, Sickle. Well, this is a perfect test site. Little traffic and low real estate value.
It's adequate, I suppose. Okay, let's get this over with. This thing on all right?
Sickle points to behind his ear and the other man pulls back his hair to reveal a small silver chip device attached to his skin.
It's ready.
What do you want him to do this time?
I want you to climb that fire escape to the absolute top. Wait a minute. This is as high as I go. You want me to break somebody's leg? Just tell me how many pieces. But up there, I don't go.
Why not?
Because I'm afraid of heights. I will get dizzy. I will fall.
That is true, Victor. He has acrophobia, among other things. Find a different test for it.
Acrophobia is not a problem with my device. Start climbing. I will do anything else you say, but I'm not going up that building. Do you understand? Sickle, I command you to climb up that fire escape. You will go to the very top. You will turn around and you will look down. And you will not be frightened of heights. Off you go.
Victor presses a button on a handheld control and Sickle's face becomes vacant. He listens unblinking to his instructions, then turns and walks confidently across the road, jumping up to pull down the retractable fire escape. The woman watches with a look of concern as Sickle starts to climb.
It's working. It's working.
It seems to be. Victor! Victor, you are risking his life! He's my nephew, my only living relative. He's the only one I can leave my... my bankruptcy to.
That's what experimentation is all about, Letha.
We cannot afford to lose him.
I am the only one we cannot afford to lose. Can't you see that I've got complete control over his mind? He has no fear, no memory, no will. He can only carry out my commands.
Sickle nears the top of the building. Tony and Tia turn a corner in their taxi and smile at each other as the taxi's engine splutters, worrying the driver.
What's up? What's happening?
We're out of gas.
What, are you crazy? Look at the dial. It points empty. Empty?
The taxi rolls to a halt at the side of the road as the children giggle at the hopeless driver.
It was all that waiting I had to do for you. I'll run down the street to the gas station and get some gas. Boy, oh boy.
He pulls out a gas canister from the boot of the car.
You guys are costing me a lot of dough. I sure hope you make the tip worth it.
He walks off. Tony has a vision of a man falling from a rooftop.
Something's gonna happen to someone near here.
We've got to help.
No, I think you'd better stay here and wait for the driver. I'll go. I think he came from back that way.
Be careful. And remember what Uncle Vinay said.
Smiling, Tony gets out of the taxi, crosses the road and jogs down a street. Sickle reaches the top of the building, climbing off the fire escape and onto the roof ledge.
That is enough! Bring him down!
Sickle, turn to your right. Balance yourself and walk along the ledge.
Stop! I'll bring him down myself. Give that to me.
She knocks the control out of Victor's hand.
Look what you've done.
He picks up the short-circuited damage control as Letha looks up to see Sickle continue to walk along the roof ledge. She's frightened.
Sickle, stop! Sickle, I'm commanding you to stop! Sickle, this is Dr. Victor Garen commanding you to stop!
Sickle continues to walk. Tony walks to the end of the street looking around him.
He's out of control.
Sickle! Go back! Sickle!
They wave furiously as Sickle steps off the roof ledge.
No!
She turns away as the body plummets. Tony rounds the corner to see Sickle fall and closing his eyes freezes the body a meter from hitting the ground. He runs towards the body. Victor, who had turned his head, looks up tentatively to see Sickle suspended in the air.
Letha, look.
I can't look.
You must.
She turns slowly, hands covering her face, and looks astonished at the floating form. She looks to Victor, then back to Sickle, as Tony runs up to the body, manoeuvring it upright, then safely back to the ground.
It's miraculous.
There are no miracles, Letha. Only scientific explanations for everything.
Well, then, just explain to me what we're seeing.
It must be that boy. There's a force that centers round that boy.
Tony helps Sickle off the road.
A force capable of countermanding the basic physical law of gravity.
Victor, I don't know what you're talking about.
Molecular mobilization. I need that boy, Letha. I need him desperately.
Now, just a minute.
Victor stares at her, a smile emerging. He nods sinisterly at her. Tia gets out of the taxi, fed up with waiting.
Brilliant, my boy, brilliant.
Congratulations, young man, for a fantastic... Well, whatever it was you just did, it was absolutely heroic.
It was nothing, I just...
Tony flinches and falls. Tia flinches, leaning against the taxi, looking concerned. Victor holds a large needle, placing a cap on its end from behind an unconscious Tony. He smiles at Letha. Tia runs away from the taxi as Victor carries Tony's lifeless body to the car and Letha leads Sickle by the arm, helping him inside. As Tia turns the corner into the same street, the sports car passes right by her unnoticed. The taxi driver returns to his cab with a full gas canister to find the children are gone. He looks around trying to spot them. Tia stands under industrial water towers looking for Tony. The taxi driver screeches away angrily. Tia runs through quiet streets searching for Tony. Tia arrives on a deserted concourse, staring at an abandoned car with a smashed windscreen. Four young boys jump over a wall and run towards her.
Get off the street!
Run!
Hide!
Here come the goons!
Let's get 'em!
As two bigger boys appear, Tia runs.
They ride
They round a corner to find more boys waiting for them. They face larger boys who are in dirty clothes and approach them, smacking their fists into the palms of their hands. The group turn to see others closing in on them. They run down an alleyway, Tia following closely. Six bigger boys run after them. They emerge in a rubbish enclosure and the four boys hide behind four trash cans, whilst Tia hides separately behind another. The others round the corner in time to see their hiding place.
It ain't no use hiding behind those trash cans.
Hey, the earthquake's got girls in their gang. Let's finish them.
The young boys cower as Tia looks around her and focusing on two upstanding trash cans closes her eyes, causing them to roll fast into the menacing group, knocking them down. Tia makes the four trash cans behind which the boys hide tilt forward, spitting out their rubbish. They fall and the younger boys stand to see them, laughing. Furious, the older boys stand up, causing the youngest to crouch down again.
That was an ambush!
With a determined look, Tia makes the four empty trash cans rise up into the air, exposing the stunned youngsters. They float forwards towards the astonished gang, tipping upright in the air and hovering above their heads. Tia conjures another two full trash cans and one by one drops them onto each boy's head, trapping him inside.
Stop banging into me! Look at you. I can't see!
The youngsters laugh at the heap of cans that roll around with legs sticking out of them. They jump over them and Tia joins them as they run away. The small group run down a concrete bridge arch, swinging on a pole through a gap in fencing. Once safe, they high-five each other and turn to Tia.
From getting wiped out.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
What's your name?
Tia.
I'm Rocky.
I'm Muscles.
Crusher.
And I'm Dazzler. We're the Earthquake Gang.
Does that scare you?
They look at Tia expectantly.
No.
Let's change our name again. We gotta have a name that scares.
Yeah.
Hey, how'd you do what you done?
Well, I really didn't do anything.
Yeah, are you a magician or something?
No.
You want to join our gang?
I'm sorry, but I'm looking for someone. Thanks anyway.
Aw, sure. I guess you're like the rest of them. You must have heard we're a nothing gang. Yeah, well, we ain't always gonna be nothing. Someday we're gonna be the toughest. Take over this whole territory.
Someday they're gonna run when they see us coming down the block.
All right.
It's just that I've got to find my brother.
What gang does he belong to?
He doesn't belong to any gang.
I never heard of a guy that never belonged to a gang.
I'm sure something's happened. I've got to find him.
Well, if anybody could find him, we could. I mean, we know this town inside out.
Oh, would you?
Hey, yeah, sure. Listen, you done us a big favor. Now we'll do it for you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Hey, come on, let's go.
They run off with Tia. They walk along a dusty path alongside high-rise buildings.
That Tony sure made himself scarce.
We better walk you home.
Where do you live?
I was supposed to stay at a hotel, but I don't know which one.
You can stay in our secret hideout.
Yeah.
Thank you.
We'll look for Tony tomorrow.
If we aren't too busy beating up the goons.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Yo-Yo!
They see a green van.
Get down!
Come on high!
All five hide below the path's ridge, watching a suited Chinese man get out.
Did he see us?
I don't know, but he's coming this way.
Who is he?
Our worst enemy. He's worse than the Golden Goons.
He's Mr. Yokomoto, the truant officer.
He's trying to make us go back to school.
Let's go.
As they move away, Mr. Yokomoto catches sight of them and runs towards the ridge. When he gets there, he looks down to see nothing but a deserted hillside. He looks around, baffled, but sees nothing but trees. As he walks back towards his van, the children silently watch him concealed from within one of the tree's branches. As dusk falls, they walk along disused railway tracks until they reach a derelict white-fronted house.
That's our hideout!
They walk into the rickety house. Paint is peeling off the walls, timber lies rotten and broken, and the stairs that they climb are damaged.
What time do the ghosts get here?
Hey, don't say things like that.
This place could really scare you.
Come on.
They open a trap door and Rocky gasps at the sight of a skull on a table. They walk to a large table with a lamp on it. They strike a match and light its candle, sitting on chairs. The light illuminates Tia, who stands.
This is where we're going to live when we run away from home.
Yeah, you can't be tough and take orders from your mom or your older sister.
That's why I quit school. You can't be tough and educated, too.
Yeah.
Tia suddenly looks away.
Tony!
The boys hide under the table.
You call them the spirits?
Shh. She's weird.
She's creepy.
I ain't too sure I want to meet this Tony.
Shh.
Tony, where are you? He's coming in again. I can only see a light. That's all. Now it's going black. Completely gone.
Tony lies strapped to a bed.
He's doing that?
He's projecting a magnetic field through his reflexes as he struggles to regain consciousness. His output is so great that my machines aren't even capable of measuring it.
And he's dangerous.
Once I have control of his brain, Letha, he will only be dangerous to others.
Letha grabs Victor's arm.
I hope you realize that kidnapping is a criminal offense.
My experiments are more important than the law, Letha.
Sickle lies on another bed.
With these receptors placed on certain people, combined with this boy's powers, I could become one of the most influential men in the world.
You're absolutely brilliant, Professor. Now we can go ahead with my plans, too.
Don't bother me with your plans. They're empty. They're unimportant. A comment, perhaps, on you and the kind of life you've been leading.
Letha stares at him as Victor smirks, turning away with clipboard in hand. Furious, she takes his arm.
Now, you look here. Doctor, professor, physicist, whatever you are. I built this laboratory for you at great expense. I used every penny I had. Now, we've made a lot of plans, and I won't let you upset them. I want some money fast.
Letha, we are worlds apart. My mind is filled with large concepts. Mankind, the universe. You only worry about the horse that's running in the third race.
Sure, I gamble. But with my own money. You're the worst kind of gambler. You use other people's money and then want to keep all the winnings for yourself. Well, you can be sure of one thing, Victor. I'll be around to pick up the chips with you.
They are interrupted by flashes of light coming from wires attached to Tony's body, who murmurs as he begins to regain consciousness. Victor injects him with more sedative, watching intently as Tony grows still again.
We'll be back in the morning with maps and some breakfast.
I'll bring an egg for my own refrigerator.
And I'll bring some day-old bread.
And I'll bring some milk for you.
Thank you. You're good friends.
What's the trouble with us? We don't want to be good. We want to be bad.
Yeah. Hey, let's go, you guys. Mom's gonna yell at me.
See you tomorrow, Tia.
Yeah, we'll find Tony tomorrow for sure.
They look back over their shoulders at Tia as they leave through the trapdoor.
Let's stay close together on the way out, guys.
Alone, Tia looks around the attic room before going to sit on a dusty bed's edge. A grand turreted building. Victor fits a small receptor behind Tony's ear, who lies unconscious on the table watched by Sickle and Letha.
Good.
Victor reaches for a handheld control, presses the button and speaks into it.
This is Professor Gannon, commanding you to awaken.
Tony's eyes open and he stares at a nearby microscope.
Over there. Tony!
Tia sits up straight, closing her eyes and seeing surgery instruments and the microscope.
He's in some kind of a room. Like a hospital. With machines and instruments and things.
Oh, that's easy. All we have to do is check all the hospitals.
While we're going around looking for a fight. Come on.
They run down through the trap door, Muscles letting Tia go before him. Victor instructs Tony.
You will now function exclusively under control. You will no longer think independently. All thinking and reasoning will be done by the voice that commands you. Do you understand?
Yes.
What is your name?
Tony.
Where are you from?
Witch Mountain.
Sounds like some hick town to me.
Victor frowns.
How did you suspend Mr. Sickle in mid-air?
By energizing matter.
Do you mean to say that you can control molecular flow?
Yes, sir.
How did you learn to do this?
I was born with the ability.
I wish to see a demonstration of molecular flow. You are strapped to the table. Unbuckle yourself and sit up.
Tony does so. Victor, Letha, and Sickle stare at him with intrigue. The group of children run underneath concrete walkways.
Power has come into our hands, which is centuries before its time. We must use it wisely.
Well, what can you have him do? Have him go around making people's belts unbuckle?
Possibilities are unlimited.
Oh, come on. Just some gimmick, that's all.
Victor looks from Sickle to Tony and speaks into the control.
Tony. Mr. Sickle there, whose life you saved, doesn't seem to believe in you. Mr. Sickle needs convincing, Tony.
Tony looks to an oxygen canister and causes the mouthpiece to come alive, its rubber cord snaking up in the air. On its metal stand, the tank follows Sickle as he ducks and weaves away from it.
Back!
Sickle backs into a wall next to a caged goat and puts his fists up.
I can see how that would be a big hit in a scientific convention. But the bottom line is, how do we make money with him?
I will demonstrate an industrial application. Come with me, Tony.
Victor leads Tony from the bed, leaving Sickle confronted by the sinister mouthpiece from the gas canister. Victor leads Tony into a small cellar and Letha watches closely.
Now, Tony, those wine casks, stack them neatly.
Tony looks to a pile of strewn wine casks and levitates them slowly into the air and down onto a wooden holder. Letha looks to Victor, who looks at her smugly. Tony completes the stacking of the casks, all the while expressionless.
glasses of burgundy, please.
Tony makes two wine glasses rise up into the air from a tray and float towards two casks. The pegs are turned and wine pours into each glass. Letha is wide-eyed, glancing at Victor, who has a wry smile. The glasses float towards Letha and Victor, who take hold of each one. They toast in front of Tony's face.
Molecular mobilization.
To molecular capitalization.
She sips her wine and Sickle is slumped against the cage, the gas mask firmly clamped over his mouth, the goat licking his head through the mesh.
Hey, Tia, got any more clues?
No, nothing at all. It's so strange.
We've been to every hospital, and he's in none of them.
It's like his mind's a blank.
He probably conked out somewhere.
Don't listen to him.
We'll find Tony for sure.
Yeah, we'll turn this town upside down.
Yeah.
Letha sits at a desk in a drawing room by lamplight. A fire crackles. Sickle walks in.
What are you doing?
Thinking about us in a different place, such as Las Vegas with Tony.
7 or 11 every time, right?
A day at the races.
All the long shots come in.
You do have an imagination, after all. The possibilities with Tony are unlimited. For example, he stacked the wine casks by just looking at them. If he can stack them, he can unstack them.
She hands Sickle a newspaper. The headline reads, $3 million stack of gold at museum.
The gold is on display at the museum, protected by an impenetrable security system. Just sitting there waiting for us to penetrate it.
Wait a minute. Us? You mean Gannon said it's okay to use the control and Tony?
Professor Gannon is extremely busy being a genius. I own half the invention, half of Tony. That means I own half of the profits. So far, the return on my investment has been half of zero.
What about the security? We'll need an army to pull it off.
We'll have an army with us. Tony!
Sickle smiles at his aunt. Tia lies on the bed in the attic. She is restless and sits up.
Tony! Tony! Tony, why can't I get through to you? Tony?
Tony sleeps, not stirring, the remote control handheld device by his bed.
I'll pick up the new transistors, make a few stops, and be back later on.
Don't worry.
Letha and Sickle watch Victor drive away.
Everything's under control.
They approach Tony asleep on a bed and Letha picks up the remote control. She wears leather gloves and speaks into the device.
Tony, this is Letha Wedge commanding you to open your eyes. Now, stand up.
Tony throws back his cover and stands.
We're going to the museum for education and profit.
Outside the museum, a sign reads, 49 a gold exhibit, 1 week only, featuring the multi-million dollar pyramid of gold from the old mint, plus mining exhibits and memorabilia of the old west. Sickle pulls up outside and gets out of the car with Letha and Tony.
Tony and I will do a little sightseeing.
Letha and Tony walk to the museum, leaving Sickle by the car. A cordoned-off area in the museum is heavily guarded. In a glass case is a pyramid of gold bullion stacked on top of each other. Letha and Tony walk in. The earthquake gang and Tia run towards the hideout.
Wait!
Tia closes her eyes, seeing the gold.
Gold! I see gold!
Hey, it's mine!
Hey, no, it's mine!
Hey, give it to me!
No!
They scrabble in the dirt. Tia shakes her head, concentrating with her eyes closed. At the museum, Tony watches a man climb into a wagon.
A stagecoach.
She puts her hands to her head as the boys look around.
She must be tuned in on a Western.
Yeah.
Tony watches a guard walk past various dummies dressed in Western-style clothes. One dummy holds a gun.
I see dummies! That's you! No! Old things. Clothing.
Hey, he's at the Salvation Army!
Nah, they don't got stagecoaches at the Salvation Army.
And they don't got gold neither.
Wait a minute! We had one of them nothing school trips to the museum! Yeah, and they got a big pile of gold!
In a stagecoach. They had to kick me out.
We've got to go there.
Come on, it's over here!
They run in the direction of the museum. Letha walks towards the gold's case, Tony following. She looks around, seeing a guard viewing room overlooking the exhibition floor. Outside, Sickle manoeuvres the car, parking with a boot, facing towards the main entrance to the museum. He opens the trunk expectantly. Letha guides Tony to a quieter corner of the museum.
Now, Tony, we're going to create a little diversion. The stagecoach. I want you to roll it all around the museum.
The stagecoach circles around the pyramid of gold, people scattering to get out of its way. A bemused security guard watches it pass by him.
Hey, where are the horses?
I don't know.
Now cause total chaos.
Watch out!
From the mining exhibition, two coal carts roll out, one with a dummy holding the handles. He knocks a security guard into it. Other guards attempt to regain control and order, and another looks on from within the security room.
Short-circuit the control system.
The guard jumps away from the exploding equipment. There is chaos with guards scrabbling over the mobile stagecoach, people looking on in amazement, and coal trucks bumping into onlookers. A guard wriggles from the chassis of the stagecoach, jumping up onto the frame and climbing to the roof, attempting to rescue a woman trapped inside. A female guard winces, backing away from the stagecoach, falling into the lap of a dummy. Tony makes the pair rise up into the air to gasps and screams. Victor walks down stone steps into the basement to find Tony's bed empty. He stops in his tracks, shocked.
Oh, no.
Letha! Letha!
He walks into the drawing room searching for Letha. He moves to her desk, picking up some paperwork. Removing a piece of paper, he sees the newspaper headline and looks grim-faced. At the museum, a dummy of an Indian wielding an axe approaches a frightened group of people. A security guard chases after it. The guard on top of the stagecoach roof jumps in surprise, seeing the Indian dummy behind him. The guard reaches up to his head and pulls off his toupee, throwing it at the dummy where it lands on the axe handle. Mock furnaces burst into life, shooting out tongues of fire. Guards kick at their doors, attempting to quell the flames. The dummy with the gun approaches the gold's case, turning on a guard who falls on the rope barrier. Two other guards jump on the dummy, tackling him to the floor. The earthquake gang and Tia run over a bridge en route to the museum. Letha fixes her attention on the gold pile in the midst of the chaos.
Now tell me, make a hole in the plastic shield. And it doesn't have to be neat.
Tony dissolves the plastic partition of the gold case.
Tony, unstack the gold bars and deliver them to Mr. Sickle.
One by one, the gold bricks rise up into the air and float out of the museum towards Sickle, who waits by the car.
Las Vegas, here we come.
Sickle smiles as the gold travels towards him, his hands outstretched to load the car, but the force of the first brick knocks him back against the car, closing the trunk. He grimaces as the second brick hits him. The children run up to see the gold bricks smash into the parked car under which Sickle lies cowering.
Come on, follow me!
Tony, make them go faster.
Tony causes the bricks to lift in big piles and travel out of the museum. Tia runs onto the exhibition floor, ducking as the gold whizzes past her head. Tia looks on in horror at the chaos around her. The earthquake gang are astonished. Tia walks to the center of the museum and Rocky and Muscles walk backwards to watch, knocking into a woman.
Look out, lady! Yeah, why'd you watch where you're going, you big dummy?
The figure turns around and Rocky jumps back, frightened to see it's a floating dummy. Muscles catches him. Tia puts her hands to her head and the female security guard lowers to the ground on the dummy's lap, falling into a show pool of water. The furnaces stop blasting.
Tony, what's happening?
Molecular flow reversing.
Are you doing this?
No.
Then who is?
It would have to be one of my people.
There are more like you.
Yes.
Oh, let's get out of here.
Tony! Tony!
What's that?
Tony stares at Tia on the way out.
It's my sister. My sister Tia.
Oh, this is no time for a family reunion.
Letha pulls Tony away as Tia reverses all of the chaos. With normality restored, Tia and the boys run after Tony. Now outside, Letha looks surprised to see the car crushed and dented with a pearl of gold on its roof, Sickle cowering underneath the chassis. Victor furiously strides towards Letha and Tony. They walk to meet him with Sickle crawling out from under the car. As they hurry to Victor's nearby car, Tia and the boys emerge to see them.
Tony!
You fool! How could you do this?
Not now!
They pile into Victor's car, Sickle attempting to start the engine.
What's wrong?
I don't know. I keep it running perfect.
It's Tony's sister. She did it. She's as weird as he is.
They look to see Tia running towards them across the museum's grounds.
Tony, I command you to make the motor of this car run perfectly and continuously without any interference from your sister.
Tia and the boys watch the car speed away.
I can't stop the car. Tony's energizing it.
It's like your brother. Didn't even know ya.
A green bus pulls up, a logo reading Board of Education.
Yo-yo!
Let's go!
No, don't run.
You crazy?
You don't want to go to school.
Please, trust me. Now come on, hurry.
Hey, wait for me!
Come on, you guys, get in there. Let's go.
Come on, get in.
Mr. Yokomoto is stunned as the children get in his bus.
I'm dreaming. You're surrendering to the Board of Education?
Sir, do you see that car going down the street?
Yeah.
Well, my brother's in it, and he ought to be going to school, too. You ought to catch up with him.
Another truant? Oh, boy, we're going to have a load.
Yeah. Sophia controls the speeding bus.
This bus can really move.
The bus closes in on Victor's car. Both vehicles speed in and out of concrete columns on a dirt road.
Tony, look through the window, the rear window. That minibus is following us. I command you to place obstacles in its path.
Tony sees a stationary lorry and makes it roll out into the path of the bus. The bus is clipped and spins round, but continues to give chase.
City property. Damaged city property.
Victor's car passes parked big yellow buses. One pivots out to block the road, but Tia raises it up for their bus to pass safely underneath.
They said these glasses were shatterproof. Was that a bus or a bridge?
Mr. Yokomoto's glass lens is cracked. Victor looks in the rearview mirror and is shocked to see the green bus still in pursuit.
They're still with us. Tony, you must stop her.
Tony makes one end of a lorry pivot round, causing the bus to try and squeeze through the closing gap. It smashes into a parked car, but wobbling keeps going.
Man, that man was really buzzing.
Yeah, you're still alive.
She counteracts everything that Tony does. Tony, you've got to stop her.
Victor glares at Tony, who focuses his attention on a red train with Santa Fe written on the side. It rolls out across the road. The children brace themselves.
Stop over that hill. Tony, you will cause the reflection of the sun on the rear window to magnify and shine so brightly that our pursuers will be blinded by it.
The green bus appears over the hill. Mr. Yokomoto swerves as a white flash of light momentarily blinds him. The bus crashes into a parked car and flips onto its roof, sliding down the hill past Victor's parked car. Letha, Sickle and Victor smile triumphantly. An unsuspecting policeman watches the battered bus slide past him. He follows it as Victor slips away. The bus collides with a fire hydrant, water spurting everywhere.
But I'm still going to take you to school, just as soon as I...
Come on!
The children run off as Mr. Yokomoto stands by his destroyed bus, dazed and emotional. The approaching policeman gets out of his car and fixes Mr. Yokomoto with a disapproving glare, who smiles weakly.
Jeopardized my life's work.
My accountants are desperate.
Proved yourself incompetent yet again. I don't even know if I can trust you anymore.
You don't trust me. I trusted you enough to make my credit rating look like Swiss cheese. Don't tell me you don't trust me. We have to trust each other.
Right. I trust everybody. Yes. Well, fortunately, I thought of something very spectacular which will satisfy both of us in terms of prestige and money.
Well, you have the prestige. I'll take the money. But before we celebrate your return to sanity, we'd better do something about Tony's sister. How did she know we were at the museum?
I'm not certain.
Tony, how did your sister know that we were at the museum?
Telepathy. She'll show up again and ruin everything.
Well, in that case, she will have to be, as you would say, scratched.
Letha flutters her eyelashes and smiles. Tia is fast asleep. Tia puts on her shoes and follows the sound of Tony's voice. She emerges outside in the darkness.
Tony, which way?
This way.
Tia continues to walk, two large high-rise buildings behind her lit up.
Which way, Tony? Which way?
Keep moving straight ahead.
Tia walks over a grassy hill, the city nightscape in the distance behind her.
This is the house. Here, look. Come on.
Tia turns to see the large stone house towering above her on a hill. She unlocks the door with her mind and looks around her. Slowly, she walks down to the basement. Tia jumps, seeing the goat.
Be quiet, Alfred, you silly thing.
Tia!
She turns and sees Tony blindfolded and tied to a chair across the room. Sickle grabs Tia from behind, pressing a chloroform hanky to her face. She struggles but soon loses consciousness. Tia lies on her back in a transparent plastic tent. Victor pumps in a gas as Letha, Tony and Sickle look on.
I put her into a state of comatose neutralization.
All four walk out, leaving Tia unconscious. The earthquake gang arrive at the hideout.
She didn't go looking for Tony without us. Yeah, she needs us.
From within her tent, Tia struggles, disorientated and drugged by the gas.
Tony, Crusher, Muscle, Rocky, Dazzler, Alfred. Alfred, what's the matter with me? Where am I? Alfred, find the earthquakes.
Alfred gets out of his cage.
Listen to me.
Headbutting the wooden door, Alfred jumps out of the hole, trotting away down the steps and down the street. Alfred jumps up from one car to another as they wait in a queue while young children cross the road. A woman applies her lipstick in a rearview mirror and seeing Alfred stare down at her through her windscreen distractedly lets her lipstick cover her face. Sickle drives down a road leading to an industrial site built into the hills. Tall cranes stand high and wire fencing surrounds them. Letha, Tony, Victor and Sickle get out to stare.
Place is that?
That is an underground plutonium processing plant.
Translate that into financial terms.
Plutonium is more valuable than gold.
That's why I like science. They're always discovering new expensive things.
It is used in the explosive core of nuclear missile warheads.
I suppose you're going to have Tony split an atom bomb or something?
In effect, yes.
Sickle and Letha look at Victor's serious face with concern.
Well, I didn't count on killing anybody, especially not us.
It will never go that far. They will pay anything to prevent it. This is the first step towards my becoming the most powerful man in the world.
They all get back in the car. Sickle drives down to the guard hut by the entry and exit barriers to the processing plant.
IDs, please.
Take a powder.
Letha winds down her window and the guard hut lifts off the ground and comes to land on the back of an exiting red lorry. The guard helplessly looks around him as Letha smiles.
Those are the outer security scanners. Put them out of commission. Permanently.
Tony blows two satellite pods up on hills which topple over disabled.
The scanning systems are malfunctioning.
In the security control room.
All right, let's run a maintenance check. $3 million, you think these things would work right?
Meanwhile, Alfred trots towards a man speaking to a taxi driver.
Andy's place, you know where it's at?
Yeah, sure, I know everything is second and third, right?
No, fourth and Market.
Oh, that one, yeah, sure, hop in.
It's kind of a hurry, could you give me that?
Alfred runs and butts the man getting in the cab who falls out the other side. The taxi speeds off, Alfred sitting on the back seat.
Have you had a couple of minutes, sir? Listen. Feel the power in his cab? But it's got lots of power. You know, everybody tells me I ought to be a race driver. What do you think? Well, I think you're wrong.
Sickle pulls up outside the processing plant's main platform. Letha, Victor, and Tony walk down to a heavy red door which Sickle heaves open for them. The door reads, emergency exit, plutonium furnace.
Don't worry about that, sir. I'm a very safe driver. Want me to tell you how safe? I'll tell you anyway. I've been driving a hack for 19 years and 11 months. And in all that time, I never even pulled one scratch in a cab. In fact, next month they're going to give me a gold safety award. What do you think of that? Boy, you don't like nothing. I sure hope you're a good tip. I knew there was something about you that didn't look right.
The driver looks in the rearview mirror, then picks up a red cloth to wipe it. Alfred's reflection stares back at him. He turns around in shock, staring straight into the side of a parked police car. The cab door falls off and Alfred trots out, leaving the cabbie to confront the irritated policeman.
Hey! You owe me a fare! Officer, that goat's a guy.
The goat?
I picked up... The guy became a goat when I'm driving.
The guy?
This magician beat me out of this fare.
The magician?
My perfect record.
Record? Oh, record.
Oh, my perfect... I ain't gonna get the gold safety award.
Alfred trots through the hideout, climbing the stairs.
Hey, you hear that? That must be her now. Come on!
The boys jump, scrabbling to climb up the beams away from Alfred, who tries to get their attention. Alfred carries off Tia's red vest in his mouth, the boys chasing.
Quick!
Alfred runs along a grassy hill, the city in the background, the four boys follow. Tentatively, Victor peers through a door into a corridor where a guard stands behind a desk. Letha, Sickle, Tony and himself walk towards the guard.
May I see your IDs, please?
Tony, show him our ID.
The guard taps a pencil and he looks at Tony. Suddenly he rises up into the air.
What's happening? Why?
Don't leave me up here.
Open the door, Tony.
You can't go in there without ID.
Suspended in the air, they pass underneath him, stepping through the door, which Tony opens. Climbing the steps to the house, Alfred is still being chased by the earthquake gang. They duck under the hole Alfred had butted out before and follow him down to the basement. They run to where Tia lies, turn off the gas and remove the plastic tent.
Ew, it's still. It's all out of the gas. Come on. You okay now?
Yes, thank you.
This is some kind of science place. How'd you get here?
It was Tony. He was here.
She closes her eyes, seeing a part of the processing plant.
I saw something! What was it? It's where Tony is. I'm sure of it. A big round shape. A donut! He's eating a donut!
No way!
Is it like a ball? A great big ball? Yes. I know where he is. Let's go. Hurry!
Alfred's cry stops them leaving. Tia walks to him and picks up her red vest by Alfred's cage.
Thank you, and thanks for everything.
At the processing plant, Victor, Letha, Sickle and Tony walk down into the cooling system operation site.
We are about to make scientific history.
And some money too, I hope.
Victor looks around him, then speaks into the remote control device.
Shut down the complete cooling system of the furnace.
Tony sets his gaze on a large dial, the needle dropping from where it sits safely on green down through yellow towards red. It reads coolant temperature. A plant worker in the furnace control room looks over to the temperature dial, alerted by the alarm.
It's a red light in the cooling system.
Oh, it must be a circuit breaker. Restart the system.
He flicks a switch.
I can't get a restart.
His colleagues look up from their workstations.
Hit the backup system.
He flicks another switch, but the dial steadily decreases.
It's no going back up. I've got temperature increasing in the furnace. Let's get that coolant flowing.
The senior picks up the phone.
Furnace control.
Control? You don't really think you're controlling anything, do you?
Who is this?
This is Dr. Victor Gannon, and I have just shut down your cooling system.
Okay, you shut it down. Get it back on again.
Tell him how expensive it is to put it back on.
In exactly 1 hour, we shall be serving grilled plutonium, medium rare, to the atmosphere, unless the following conditions are met.
What conditions?
$5 million in cash. A jet waiting at the airport, safe escort, of course. And most important of all, you will announce that Dr. Victor Gannon has achieved molecular control and mind control. And that this is the first of a series of worldwide demonstrations of his power.
Victor hangs up.
How long does it take to count $5 million?
Above ground, plant workers slide down poles wearing hard hats and others run downstairs. A mass exodus begins with cars pulling out of the processing plant as the alarm blares out. In the furnace control room, many officials are gathered watching a white-haired man pace deep in thought.
We'll have to pay them. Evacuate the immediate area. Put Los Angeles on alert.
The earthquake gang step through some fencing by the side of the road and Muscles looks up at a towering golf ball advertising a golf course.
There's the big round ball. Is that it?
No, it was much bigger than
Get
that.
Get out of here.
Leave me alone. At least I tried. Hey, look!
He points towards a man by a battered green van.
It's Yo-Yo! Let's get out of here!
Come on!
They drop down by the roadside, but Mr. Yokomoto doesn't seem to care.
Hey, Yo-Yo! Don't you want to catch us?
He stares at them briefly, then closes the doors to his van.
I don't trust him. He's probably using some psychology trick on us. Come on. Don't you want to catch us?
It's not my job anymore. You're coming down here to fire me. Or destroying city property. The only thing that works is the radio. And it won't turn off. I was only trying to help you kids.
Mr. Yokomoto, I'm sorry about everything that's happened.
All I ever wanted in life was all you kids that I put back in school someday visit me and say, thanks, Mr. Yo-Yo. Yokomoto. If it wasn't for you forcing us to get an education, we would have been bums.
The boys look shamefaced.
That's all I wanted.
You see, I told you he was gonna hit us with some of that heavy psychology. I mean, I feel guilty.
Here's a further news bulletin from the plutonium plant. Unless the demands of the terrorists are met, the furnace will explode with a force of 10 megatons. An official describes the atomic furnace controls as seeming to be frozen in position, as if, quote-unquote, the molecular flow
That's Tony.
Had been interrupted. The plutonium plant is now
That's
being
where he
evacuated.
Is. We've got to go there.
And now,
how are we going to get there? Take a bus? We'll go in this.
Tia, the tires are flat.
Tia closes her eyes and puts her hands to her head. One by one, the bus tires inflate.
Come on.
Mr. Yokomoto sits in the driver's seat looking shocked as the children clamber over the bonnet and in through the windscreen. The engine starts first time and they speed off down the road. The dial has dropped to red, and a furnace control worker advises his boss.
If it doesn't start cooling soon, the chain reaction will start.
You hear that? In 10 minutes, this place is going to be a hole in the ground. Now, let's be reasonable. We now have $3.5 million here in the control room.
And the balance is on the way.
It's a deal.
Victor snatches the phone off Letha.
I do not compromise.
In the control room, the official shakes his head to signal defeat to his colleagues. Mr. Yokomoto speeds into the processing plant and up to the heavily guarded barrier. Tia causes the barriers to raise, two guards struggling to keep it down.
What are you guys doing? Nothing. We're doing nothing.
The van drives under the barrier. Children jump out of the bus, running against the flow of exiting workers, Mr. Yokomoto close behind them.
How did these children get past security?
Sir, the people that are destroying the furnace have kidnapped my brother. If I could see him, I might be able to stop them.
She can do it!
Do what?
Impossible. They're inside the furnace room. They sealed off the door somehow.
What part of the furnace has to be fixed?
The emergency cooling system.
Where is it?
5 levels down.
But it's too late. We've already begun to evacuate the plant.
Tia runs in the direction the man points to, her and the boys getting into a lift, but the door's shut, leaving Mr. Yokomoto behind. They run out of the lift to see the security guard still suspended in the air from earlier by the emergency cooling system doorway.
Tony's here, all right.
Get me down.
Tia lowers the guard.
Thank you. Where are you going?
In there.
Oh, no. You can't go beyond this point without IDs.
Tia raises the guard back into the air, and they all run under his feet to the door, which Tia unlocks. Victor paces with Letha and Sickle watching him. Tony stands expressionless. They all spin round, looking up to where Tia stands above them.
Tia!
I knew it. She'll spoil everything. I can just haste that money. We cannot let her take it away from us.
Tony!
From this moment, you will no longer hear Tia. She cannot break through my power of control. Acknowledge.
Tony, what's wrong? It's me, your sister. Try to remember me.
Acknowledge.
Tony.
Yes, sir.
Get those kids.
She'll use some of those molecules on us.
I'll take care of her before she gets the chance. You get them.
I can't get through to him. I don't know what they've done to his mind. We've got to find the emergency cooling system ourselves. How do you spell cooling? Come on.
Tia leads them downstairs as Victor hurries off, leading Tony by the arm.
Uh-oh. Whoa. Look out!
They round a corner to see Sickle at the end of a walkway. They run away as he gives chase, losing them. Hearing a noise behind her, Letha turns, but it's Sickle looking down at her. The children walk down a staircase but freeze, seeing the shadow of Sickle on the wall opposite them. They hide underneath the stairs just in time as Sickle rounds the corner looking for them. They emerge when the coast is clear.
We've got to find the emergency switches. You two go that way.
Victor hides in the shadows with Tony and looks to see Tia walking in their direction. He speaks into the remote control.
must eliminate Tia. You will cause that portable utility panel to run her down.
A steel work unit slides towards Tia, who looks shocked. She looks to another unit. Tia causes the work unit to slide out, blocking the danger. She runs from the scene. Victor drags Tony to survey the damage.
Hey, Tia! Come here!
Tia smiles and runs towards Rocky and Muscles.
Come on. That ain't it, right?
They point to a sign reading emergency cooling system.
You found it!
Yeah!
I knew it was it! But it's spelled wrong.
You guys go get Dazzler and
Muscles. Okay, come on.
Tia looks at the temperature dial, the needle dangerously close to 1,000, the maximum of the red section. She closes her eyes, concentrating. Up in the furnace control room, officials wait around her phone.
The rest of the money's just arrived, sir.
All right. I'd better call Gannon.
The cooling system's on.
They look to see the dial climb back up. Victor sees it downstairs and orders Tony.
Switch it off!
We lost him!
Oh, what's going on down there?
The dial moves one way, then the other, as Tia and Tony have a meeting of mind control. The needle teeters on the edge of 1,000, then Tia opens her eyes and the needle gradually falls back. Tony appears to struggle and Victor is nervous. He takes Tony away from the dial.
It's coming back. 650, 600.
Crusher and Dazzler watch Sickle pass their hiding place and creep out, smiling.
Gotcha!
They jump as Letha grabs the backs of their necks. Victor and Tony round a corner to see Tia standing concentrating on the dial. She does not see them, so Victor creeps back quietly behind a wall, leaving Tony exposed. He speaks into the remote control.
Tony! You must stop her!
Tony fixes his gaze on some wrought iron railings. He detaches one, sending it up into the air and approaching Tia. Shocked, she sees it and quickly causes a circular steel door to fly in its path, acting as a shield. Turning, she gasps to see Tony standing nearby.
Tony! Why are you doing these things? Why are you using your powers against me? What's happened?
From behind him, Tony sends a large electrified barrel into the air towards Tia. She sends up another and they collide.
Tony! Pretend to remember Tia. Lure her to the center of the room and...
He looks up at a suspended crane.
Make that crane drop on her!
Tony steps out further into the room, Victor still hidden from view. He shakes his head, putting his hands as if remembering as Tia looks on worried.
Tia! I'm starting to remember.
What was the matter with you?
I don't know exactly, but I need help. Don't go any closer.
She stops still.
Why? What is it, Tony?
Tia looks up as the 125-ton crane falls towards her. She manages to freeze it inches from her head. It lowers as Tony wills it. Tia struggles.
Tony, stop it! Stop it, Tony, stop it!
Victor runs out.
Exert a force greater than hers!
Why are you doing this, Tony? Stop!
Crush her! Kill her! Crush her!
Lying on the ground, Tia fights Tony's mind, noticing the control Victor holds.
Crush her! Finish her! Now!
The control explodes in Victor's hand and he drops it, Tony clutching his head. Tia raises the crane back up to the ceiling as Victor runs after the control, which jumps along the floor, short-circuiting. Tia walks to Tony, searching his face for recognition. He is dazed.
Tia. Where are we? What's happened?
She reaches behind his ear, pulling away the silver chip device. As Tony looks at it, he has flashbacks of what has happened. Injections, the gold in the museum, car chases, Victor and the coolant temperature dial. He stares open-mouthed. Victor stares at the dormant remote control greedily. He bends to pick it up. Ah! Rocky and Muscles run down a corridor and into Sickle. Victor walks out, seeing Tia holding the chip.
Tony, we can still do it. We can still make use of molecular control.
Okay, Doc, let's do it.
Smiling, Tony sends him up into the air, spinning him in somersaults. Tony sets him down on a plank of wood that's suspended high up with ropes. Victor clings on, sweating fearfully. Letha appears, pushing Crusher and Dazzler. She freezes, seeing brother and sister side by side. She lets go of the boys, who run to Tony and Tia.
Letha!
Looking up, she sees Victor and looks cautiously back at the children with a sickly smile.
Why don't we all go and have some candy and sodas and ice cream?
Tia laughs at Tony and Letha's face grows stony. She rises up in the air to join Victor on the suspended plank of wood.
My faith in science.
Behind them, Sickle climbs some stairs, restraining Rocky and Muscles. In shock at seeing Tia and Tony, he lets them go and with hunched shoulders stares at them fearfully.
Sickle!
Slowly looking up, he sees Letha and Victor and defeated looks back to the children. Tia and Tony smile at each other, causing Sickle to cover his face with his hands. He knows his fate. Lying on his stomach along the plank with Letha and Victor at each end, he whimpers.
And Letha! And Letha!
It's absolutely dreadful the way they bring up children these days.
Mr. Yokomoto drives the children up to the Rose Bowl Stadium.
It's all my fault. It's such a mess.
Well, I guess we'll just have to fix it.
I'm sure Uncle Benet won't mind.
I'll do the engine job while you do the body work.
Okay.
So long, Alfie.
Goodbye, Alfred.
What job will you do now, Mr. Yo-Yo? Yokomoto?
Oh, I save my money. I'll probably open a Japanese delicatessen. Hey, kids, look. I don't understand this.
Tia and Tony face the green bus, and Mr. Yokomoto stares in amazement as the bus becomes good as new. Dents fill out, paint reappears, scratches disappear, and the windscreen becomes intact.
Wow,
molecules must have rearranged themselves somehow.
That's a possibility. You know what this means? They never saw the wreck. I'll tell them that the reports were exaggerated. And if your kids will go back to school, I'm sure they won't fire me. We'll go back to school. Won't you?
He looks at the earthquake gang imploringly, who look at each other.
Well, if we was to go back to school, could we get as smart as Tia and Tony? Maybe even smarter.
Yeah, sure.
Let's give it a shot.
Great. I hope the school can take it.
Goodbye, Yo-Yo.
Huh?
Goodbye.
Tia kisses his cheek and they run into the stadium.
See you later, Yo-Yo.
You promised.
Open the gate. No, everybody join hands.
Smiling, Tia and Tony float the gang over the gate in a line.
Whoa! Cool! All right! Wow, flying saucer!
Uncle Benet stands inside orange beams under the spaceship.
See you again?
Well, it's kind of hard to say.
Thanks for everything, and especially for letting me be in your gang. Take care of Alfred for me, okay?
The earthquake gang watch Tia and Tony run across the pitch to meet their uncle.
There you are. Where's your luggage?
We lost it. There were a few problems.
But you did have fun.
Oh, terrible. I just knew we should have gone surfing.
A silver-blue shaft of light transports all three up into the spaceship. The saucer flashes red and yellow and rises up into the sky as the gang wave. Four jump into the fenced gates, falling back. They climb up and over it instead.
Yourself in the bus.
But it's true.
Look, I saw those two kids do miraculous things. I believe anything and everything except that. Get in!
I hope this school teaches about flying saucers.
Yeah.
Flying saucers.
Subtly, Mr. Yokomoto looks skyward before getting into the bus. The gang look out the bus windows in time to see the flying saucer rise up from behind the Rose Stadium sign. Tia and Tony wave to the boys and Alfred as Mr. Yokomoto drives off. The saucer flies through a valley, disappearing behind a mountain. The end. Walt Disney Productions.